Checkerfin.
Board was always in my head.
Checkerfin. Checkerfin.
Yes.
It's the education gadfly
sex,
show.
Sex.
Mike and Rick tell you
early college, high school, pain and suffering, in your face, in your face,
your
face.
Listen to your word that they be preaching, cause here's the education gadfly show. Yeah. It's the education gadfly show.
Hello, this is your host Mike Petrilli of the Thomas B. Fordham Foundation, here with my co-host, a man who was just voted all-star of the first annual Think Tank Bowl, Rick Hess.
Hey, Mike. Happy 08, baby.
You too. Happy New Year to you. Did you enjoy the holidays?
We did. We did. Had a lovely Christmas season and a Happy New Year. And you?
Lovely. It was very good. Little Nico got a cold, his first cold that makes his parents nervous. But other than that, everything was
but
fine.
But it was the first holiday season as a family of three.
It was really, really exciting.
That's neat.
And Santa came and gave him lots of stuff.
What was Nico's favorite
thing? Oh, he's got
this
gym thing where he lays on his back and he can look up and he's got little rattles and things that he can hit with his arms, that he's starting to figure out that he has arms and a little bit how to use them. The problem is this looks an awful lot like a cat toy. And at the middle of the night, we hear the cats in there playing with this exact same toy. And now when Nico plays with it, they are really upset because they think he's playing with their toy.
Are you sure you didn't accidentally give him a cat toy?
I mean, the truth is a lot of these infant toys and cat toys, they're very much the same. They're probably the same companies that are printing them out.
And yet people complain that evolution doesn't make sense.
Yeah, I bet they charge a lot more for the baby toys.
You should probably just buy the cat toy and save $30.
You should just buy the cat toys. That's not a bad idea. Mm-hmm. I have not thought about that.
Boom, boom.
So you've been watching all kinds of football?
Watched the Skins and the Patriots. Redskins made it to the postseason after a season of turmoil, man.
Unbelievable.
It was touching.
And the Patriots, I watched one football game of the year. I watched the Patriots game. I was excited to see the Giants playing so well. I don't know, though, Rick. You're all excited about a perfect season, but they're cheaters. I mean, isn't the lesson supposed to be that if you cheat, as the Patriots did early in the season, taping another team's plays, that they should be disqualified?
Well, since they got busted, for this taping infraction in the first half of the first game of the season, and it could have only been helpful at halftime, therefore the added kind of strategic value was nil.
I think it's just like the steroids.
It's nothing like the
cheaters.
Steroids.
Cheaters. Get that asterisk on there.
Oh, Mike. Hey, you could tell your kids that you watched the Patriots finish the first perfect season in 35 years. If it takes another 35, it's going to be 2042 before somebody does that again.
Wow.
And you will have seen it.
Wow.
Nico is going to be in his 30s by the time it happens again at this rate.
Wow. Well, you're good at math, Rick.
Hey, it's a gift.
Okay, listeners, we're going to get started. Of course, we would love to hear from you. You know, we would like to get more mail in 2008 than we did in 2007, which I have to be honest with you, listeners, would not take a lot. Okay, so send us an email. Let us know what's on your mind, what you'd like to hear on the show. You know, what's your thoughts, your feelings, your aspirations, your New Year's resolutions.
Okay, they can send that to you. I really don't care about our listeners' thoughts, aspirations, or feelings, especially their feelings.
Rick, letters@edexcellence.net is the address. Okay, let's get going. We will play a game of Pardon the Gadfly. Then we have an interview with Sunil Iyengar of the Good NEA, the National Endowment for the Arts, who will talk about the decline in reading. And then Liam will impart some education news of the weird. Sound good?
Dude, the year's a day old and you're already throwing rocks at the NEA. Maybe the National Ed Association was going to turn it around this year and you've just provoked them.
We shall see.
Okay.
Now we shall see.
Let's play some Pardon, baby.
Let's play Pardon the Gadfly.
Topic one, off to a state we only have to care about for a few more days. How big of an issue will education be in tomorrow's Iowa caucus?
Ooh, Christina, that's harsh.
I like that ad-libbing there, Christina.
Nice. Wow. She's tough.
She is sick and tired of Iowa, huh?
Oof. As are many of us.
Yes. So what do you think, Rick?
I think education will play just a slightly larger role than, say, women's hat sizes at Macy's.
Yes.
How about you?
I think that's about right. You know, over the holidays, there was a big New York Times spread on the candidates on the issues, and there were maybe 10 issues listed, and guess what? Education was not one of them. Now, I'm not saying that the New York Times is always right, but I thought that was pretty interesting. And, of course, this leads to the next question. Where are Eli Broad's and Bill Gates' $60 million going? I mean, global warming is above there. Now, you could say that, probably the people behind Al Gore's movie spent more than $60 million. Maybe what they should have done is produced a big documentary and found some former vice president to go around giving it.
Didn't Checker make something like that like 10, 15 years ago, his PBS series or whatever about...
I don't know that it ever came to fruition.
I'm pretty sure, right? I think we're pretty much aired. I remember somebody watching Checker stroll into like, you know, Urban War Zone school. But the problem is, right, we've seen those movies. We've seen like Stand By Me and Stand and Deliver, or not Stand By Me, Stand and Deliver. And what was the one with Joe Clark? Where they had the Guns N' Roses, the Welcome to the Jungle on the soundtrack. What?
Yeah. I don't remember. He had a bat. He had a baseball bat.
Great. Remember they did that opening segue. It was because when they chased out Morgan Freeman and then you segued into Welcome to the Jungle and then you could have this great stop shot photography of the schools going, oh, gorgeous.
Okay,
gorgeous.
So bottom line, Christina, education nil in terms of an issue in Iowa.
Okay. All right, back to our home city. A Washington Post article this week highlights a new special education debate. Districts, in an attempt to save money and intervene early, are increasingly using response to interventions techniques to help special ed kids before their problems are full-blown. This has led some area districts to reduce their special ed numbers significantly. Parents are irate that their kids are not getting the services they deserve. Who's right?
Well, you know, Rick, I don't have a lot of sympathy for parents in general in this case. I mean, I can understand there are probably some parents out there whose kids are not getting the services they need. But on the whole, this is a positive development. Districts are investing in early interventions, which we know tend to work better than trying to remediate kids after the fact. This means that when kids are in preschool or in kindergarten or first grade, at the first sign of any reading problems, they try to intervene. And they try to do so in a whole classroom environment instead of expensive pullout programs. Look, it's saving money. It's helping kids learn how to read. This is a good thing.
Yeah. I mean, you know, if this were 35 years ago and you had parents banging on the door because our kids couldn't get any services and weren't getting the help they needed, that'd be a different story. It's like we've talked about. The pendulum has swung quite a bit here in the case of special needs kids. We're spending enormous numbers of dollars. Mostly these districts are getting beat up for over-identifying kids and for not doing enough to keep them in the classroom environment. So it's, you know, you feel for the school administrators here because it's a can't-win situation. They're trying to keep the kids in the classroom. They're trying to be cost-effective. They're trying to get ahead of the curve here. And are they getting patted on the back for it? Nah. Now they're getting beat up because some parents who want more stuff for their kids, shockingly, don't feel they're getting everything they'd like to see. You know, that's – yeah, I think this is one of those cases where, the district officials ought to be supported for trying to do the right thing.
I don't know. It seems like our segments are shorter this year.
I think Kobe's trying to set a new discipline for 08.
Trigger finger.
I think we're going to go ahead and disregard the buzzer when we feel it says.
We're going to overtime.
A little bit of insurrection, baby.
Overtime. Well, I'll say to add to that is just that I think parents, I can understand parents saying, look, they'd like the early interventions and they'd like the extra tutoring. Well, who wouldn't? Mm-hmm. You know, but we have scarce resources in public systems, and so we have to make decisions. And it's not fair for one class of students to always have rights that trump the rights of everybody else.
You know, I mean, that's right. And, you know, if in this article, if there had been more evidence that these parents were sympathetic to the challenges administrators were working with and saying, look, I recognize, you know, the limits, but here's what I'm not getting. But I didn't see that. All I saw was the usual litany of, you know, parents' job is to demand everything they can for their kid. So you understand that.
Yeah.
But you'd like to see a little bit of understanding for what, you know, district leaders are trying to deal with.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Last one. High school students in Los Angeles are angry that they weren't consulted about Mayor Antonio Villaraigosa's plans to reform their schools. Is this a valid complaint? Should high school students be included as part of school reform efforts?
Here's one where Mushhead Petrilli is going to be all over the wrong side of the divide. Look, absolutely not. I mean, the reason kids are in the school in the first place is because we're trying to teach them things. And among the things we're trying to teach them is little or nothing about the challenges of governance structures and how to design effective management systems for districts that are trying to manage tens of thousands of adults. If you're talking about 1.5 Potemkin show trials where these kids get to come up and a few, you know, teens who dress well and speak cogently are allowed to kind of mumble some inanities and then we'll listen to them, that's fine.
That's what Mike Mushhead Petrilli is arguing for. And but, by the way, it should be the really notion that you want these guys at the more than Mushhead, because it's just that I've got a soft heart.
But like the notion that we ought to hold up, you know, or we ought to hold sensible redesign efforts hostage to whether or not we can convince a whole bunch of 15-year-olds that they should be on board with it strikes me as a non-starter.
Look, it's the same question about whether or not teachers should be included in some of these reform efforts. At the end of the day, you know, management is going to need to act, and that doesn't mean that teachers should necessarily have a veto over what happens. But smart managers know that they should reach out and get input from their employees before making big changes. And so, same thing with the students. I mean, once you get to high school, students are not just empty vessels. Their motivation, their work, their effort all matters to the educational process. So you want to get them on board. You want to get them feeling some sense of optimism that things are changing. You want to make sure that the reforms you're putting in place are actually addressing the real challenges that they have every day. So I think it makes a lot of sense to reach out, get their input.
So what does that entail for you, Mike?
No, I mean, you could do lots of different ways, just the same ways that you get teacher input. I mean, you could do focus groups, you could do surveys, you know, you could bring in a group of cogent, well-dressed students into the mayor's office.
But what does this tell you? So you send a survey out to a bunch of your high schoolers.
Right.
And you ask them, what do you ask? I mean, I understand.
Look, what you might find out, for example,
you're talking about school discipline. What are you talking about? How about school governance?
Maybe you find out, for example, that what really makes them feel bad about their schools. In fact, there's no toilet paper in the bathroom. Well, and that if you just had toilet paper in the bathroom, that would go a long way in sending a signal.
What to do about governance?
It doesn't have to do about governance.
But we're talking
the mayor's
about governance
taking
here.
Over their schools.
Yes.
Okay? So he should find out, hey, what would you like to see happen in your school? And I think they're going to want some toilet paper.
Okay, but
are you against that, Rick? Do you believe that
poor
and minority children don't deserve toilet paper? Is that your position, Rick?
Absolutely not. I think they are entitled to toilet paper. And in fact, if what you're suggesting is that we survey them about quality of schooling indicators, like is there enough toilet paper and are the restrooms clean? I'm with you.
All right. Now,
what
we
I don't
deal.
Want to ask them about is what do you think ought to be the compensation strategies
yes,
for
of
your
course.
Instructors?
Right,
but this
course.
Is about reform strategies.
No,
we're not talking
on.
About toilet paper availability.
I think Rick is a mushhead. He
oh,
wants
for
to.
God's
See,
sake.
You want to get input from students. Thank you.
About the same
Close.
Thing? Oh, for heaven's sake.
All right. Well, it's actual debate.
Good Lord.
Like it. Okay, it is time for our interview. Let's take a listen. Joining us today in the Education Gadfly Show is Sunil Iyengar, the Director of Research and Analysis at the National Endowment of the Arts. Sunil, welcome to the show.
Thanks, Mike. Great to be here.
Well, you had a big ending to 2007 with a big report that came out and has gotten a lot of ink looking at whether or not Americans are reading much anymore. What did that report find?
Well, the report had three findings, and this is coming from a variety of sources, federal, academic, nonprofit, and industry, large-scale surveys that have been conducted in the last several years. And the most recent findings show us that Americans, unfortunately, are spending less time reading as a nation, and that's in terms of quantity and of time spent reading. And it's primarily among young adults and teenagers, but of course, adults as a whole also show some drop-offs in reading. We also see reading comprehension skills are eroding as part of this. And this finding is very strongly correlated with the diminishing amount of time that's spent for, you know, reading of any type that the study is showing. So we're seeing, you know, on the one hand, people reading less, reading less well. And the third major finding, the sort of the so what finding, I would say, is that showing that these declines have serious civic, social, cultural, and economic implications, and why this matters.
Okay, so Sunil, what do people seem to be doing besides reading? I mean, are they spending more time on the internet? What's replacing this time that they're
well,
they used to be
oddly
reading?
Enough, one of the older versions of electronic media engagement, TV, is really seems to be taking up still, I would say, a disproportionate amount of time compared with reading of any type. For example, most Americans spend at least 2.5 hours per day reading. I'm sorry, watching TV. By contrast, the teenagers and adults between 15 and 24 spend about 7 to 9 minutes per weekday reading anything at all for
wow.
pleasure.
When you say
wow.
reading anything, does that include the newspaper?
That includes anything. Yes, correct.
Does that include blogs?
And blogs. Yes.
Really.
Right. So, you know, so the conventional wisdom would say, of course, this is a terrible thing. It means that people are not being able to participate in kind of our common culture. If they're not reading the newspaper, if they're not maybe reading great works of literature, we're not able to have these kind of conversations with one another that we used to have. At the same time, people could argue, look, you know, people are just expressing their preferences. If Americans would rather watch TV than read a novel or read the newspaper, so what? Why is the government, have this need to be a busybody and worry about this issue? What do you say to those people?
Well, you know, formerly, before we did the study, we might have just said, well, you know, as a cultural agency, we care about reading of literature and writing of great literature. I mean, that's part of our mandate, is to, you know, promote excellence in the arts and access to the arts. But now we realize with the study, you know, hey, the consequences are much more far-reaching, regardless of whether you have an interest in, you know, literature, great books, or good books. In fact, we're finding that, you know, as I said, employers themselves are showing, you know, that reading and writing skills are, you know, very much what they look for when they engage new hires. And they, and yet these very skills are lacking, and they're frequently cited as the top skills they find deficiencies in new hires for. So, right. You know, it's coming from the workforce, in terms of the workforce, and also reading and writing are strongly correlated with all types of other benefits that we're seeing through these large-scale surveys, such as volunteering in one's community, mm-hmm. You know, attending performing arts events, playing sports even, you know, correlates very strongly with reading ability and reading frequency.
So is there any of the coverage that you've seen out there that has surprised you? I mean, you've gotten tons of articles on this, including in The New Yorker and The New York Times, other places. Anything surprise you about that?
Well, I've been gratified that, you know, you know, the report is to some extent has succeeded in doing what we tried to do, which is generate, you know, wide variety of discussion about it and raise the prominence of reading in the American culture. The one thing I do think there's some misunderstanding about oftentimes is, you know, people still think, okay, we're the NEA, so we probably just looked at book reading, or we just looked at literature reading. It's true we had a study about 4 years ago that looked at, you know, the reading of books and literature called Reading at Risk. But this study is, you know, vastly different because it is looking at all types of reading, including online reading.
All right. Well, thank you, Sunil, for joining us on the Education Gadfly Show, and I hope you come back.
All right. Thanks a lot, Mike.
All right, Rick. So what do you think? Americans are reading less. They're watching more TV. Is this the end of civilization as we know it?
Huh. If you frame it that way. Probably no, but it's probably not a good thing. I mean, as much as I like and admire, you know, Madden 08 and Halo 3, it would probably be a good thing if we all read more and watched fewer reality pageants.
That's a bold statement you have there.
I'll throw it out there.
Mr. Mushhead. That's a guy I really like that, Rick. That was nice. You did good work today. You added that word to our
vocabulary. That's
what I do. All right. Well, you know what? That's what you do, but you know what Liam does? Education news of the weird.
Nice segue.
It is that special time, the time we wait for all week long, education news of the weird time. With our special correspondent, Liam Julian. Liam, what is weird this week?
Britain's Telegraph newspaper reports that Dr. Charles Saunders, the chairman of the British Medical Association's Consultants Committee in Scotland, thinks five-year-olds should take sex education classes. Speaking of sex education, Saunders said, quote, "It probably needs to be started off when children start school. You need to start laying the groundwork to help them and empower them to make decisions and turn things down. At five, it needs to be in language that they understand and taught in the same way as any other subject, a fairly superficial introduction," unquote. Interestingly, Scotland's sexual health record is one of the poorest in the Western world, with cases of chlamydia rising 6% between April and June of 2007. It is unclear how many of those cases are the result of sexually irresponsible five-year-olds. Rick, at what age should schools teach about sex?
Okay.
And that's education news of the weird.
Now, Liam, I got two questions for you. One, what's happened since this April to June spike in chlamydia in Scotland?
Unclear.
Okay. The second is, what do we have any idea what it means to teach sex at a relatively superficial level?
I have an idea. I don't know if I want to describe it, though. It might be, I mean, you know.
What?
Well, I mean, I don't know if it's just the sort of superficial act. And you know,
Does that mean like showing Porky's? Because that's relatively superficial. We could do
a
screening of American Pie.
And that would be wrong to show that to five-year-olds. I would not be in favor of
that. But that'd be superficial.
It would be superficial. You know, I feel like it's a recurrent theme. I mean, I think we came back to this again and again last year, Liam. Now we hear here we are again about sex ed.
Although, did you hear that Hannah Montana was eating licorice in bed with a friend of hers at a sleepover, and the pictures are all over the web now. And Vanessa Hudgens of High School Musical took naked pictures of herself and sent them around. And now, so maybe these kids probably need something that's going to keep him from being stupid earlier.
And not to mention the Spears family, which continues to be, you know, just broken apart.
But not
by
not much of this
behavior.
Seems to happen at like age 7 and 8. On the other hand, I mean, I suppose his cat's argument is that if you get inside these kids' heads early, mm-hmm. you can have a prophylactic effect. But
nice,
couldn't
nice
resist.
Rip.
Thank you. But I'm not sure it would actually work the intended way.
All right. Well said, Rick. The prophylactic effect from Mr. Mushhead. All right. That is all the time we have for today. Liam, thank you for your good work. Christina, Kobe. We're off to a good start here in 2008. Till next week.
I'm Rick Hess.
And I'm Mike Petrilli of the Thomas B. Fordham Foundation, signing off.